This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. When you're asked, paper or plastic at the grocery store, are you being asked about a bag, a sack, or a poke? And those groceries, do you carry them home or tote them home? Well, your answers very likely depend on where you are and where you've come from. American Regional English is our topic this afternoon. Our guest, linguist Alan Metcalf. Listeners, I welcome your telephone calls for Alan Metcalf. Your questions, comments, and observations about language are encouraged. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Alan Metcalf is a professor of English at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. He is the executive secretary of the American Dialect Society, and he's the author of many books, including How We Talk, American Regional English Today. How We Talk is published by Houghton Mifflin. Again, our telephone numbers, 333-WILL, that's in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Alan Metcalf, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
I suspect that in Jacksonville, Illinois, you put your groceries in a sack.
Yes, they tend to go into a sack here. I grew up in Chicago, so I had to learn the local term for it.
Yeah, so in Chicago, I think they put them in a bag.
And I remember once there was I think it was a person from Germany who was visiting the United States and knew some English and had a terrible trouble because the clerk was saying, do you want your groceries in a sack? And she had no idea what sack meant because apparently she had learned bag.
Here in Champaign-Urbana, I think you're likely to hear either one because we have a university community, large university, and we have people from northern Illinois as well as central Illinois and many other places. So you can get the whole range, although I have never heard this someone use poke in Champaign-Urbana.
Well, that would be very surprising. Poke is in a corner or two of the South, but it's not at all widespread.
Are there significant differences in American English in Illinois, north to south, rural and urban?
Well, yes, in fact, in both ways. North to south, not just in Illinois, but in all of the United States east of the Rocky Mountains, as almost everybody knows, there's a layering from a northern accent to a southern, and it's not as if you suddenly cross a dividing line and everybody's southern or everybody's northern. Maybe you've had the experience that if you're from, let's say, Urbana and not, and just the, or Champaign-Urbana, people might think that you're, Chicagoans might think you're speaking a bit southern, and people from Cairo might think you're speaking a bit northern.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens like in Bloomington, same sort of thing. There's a kind of slow gradation where a little bit more of the southern gradually occurs. But there is also a distinction between urban and rural, at least in the middle part of the state, where the cities tend to sound more northern and the rural communities tend to sound more southern.
Yeah, yeah. I hear great differences in how Illinoisans speak. I mean, just in the city of Chicago, there's great variety depending on what part of the city you're from.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I grew up in Chicago, but there are many Chicagoans who don't sound like me at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, think of the Speaker of the Illinois House, Mike Madigan.
Yes, right.
He's got that really long, flat A.
Well, there's a lot of Chicagoans participate in what's known as the Northern Cities Shift, which involves the vowels moving around a bit, and especially notable is the vowel before the A, so man or can. So instead of just man or can, it's man or can, depending upon some of them do it more than others.
Hmm. A listener is waiting to talk with us, so let's talk with this listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. You mentioned the sack, bag sort of differences, and the other one that I've noticed from north to south, I grew up in Canada, is soda, pop, and in the south, my friends tell me, they just often used to say Coke, whether it was orange or Sprite or actually Coke or whatever. They'd say, give me a Coke. But my question is, and I'll hang up and listen, is, you know, my mother was an English teacher and taught me corrected me many, many times when I made mistakes. But today I hear things used in the common sort of vernacular, which I was told were grievous mistakes. Like, for example, if you say, how are you feeling, and you say, real good, that would be two mistakes in one sentence, because it would be really and it would be well. So I was wondering sort of at what point does the usage of something that was once considered grammatically incorrect becomes common, and is it still considered incorrect, or now is it considered proper everyday English? And I'll hang up at this.
Well, first of all, he's right about the soda pop and Coke distinctions, and throughout the country there's other, well, those three are the main varieties. As for different forms of correct or incorrect verbs, well, not verbs, but words in general, one of the interesting things about the about real good as opposed to really well or whatever is that those variations have been going on for quite a while, and so English teachers 100 years ago were correcting that, and I suspect they probably will in the future. Those who are optimistic think that they'll eradicate real good, and those who are pessimistic think that real good will eradicate really well, but experience suggests that both versions will still be around.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener on a cell phone on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
My cell phone sometimes conks out, but I'll just ask my question and then hang up. I have found people who say the word root or route quite differently.
Mm-hmm.
I work with people who say route all the time. It's like a delivery route. And yet I was upgraded once in a trip to New York City for saying that instead of route. And I'll hang up and listen to any response you might have.
Okay.
Yes, root and route are two pronunciations, and they even sometimes differentiate depending upon the meaning of it, whether it's Route 68 or I'll route this one way or another. I don't have at my fingertips the exact regional variations on those, but they do vary a lot.
Yeah. I use the word route generally, although when I'm thinking about the song and the old Route 66, I'll say route. So I'm using both.
Yes, it's very typical that even within our own speech, if there's two variants, we might make some distinctions. Another example, which isn't pronunciation, but there's the matter of pail and bucket. And those words essentially have the same meaning, but many people have the sense that they ought to mean different things. So some people will say, well, a pail is metal, a bucket is wood, or many other differences like that.
Let's talk with another listener. Again, a listener on a cell phone in Kokomo, Indiana. Good afternoon.
Hello there.
Hi.
I'm a Bostonian currently living in the St. Louis area. We don't have Coke. We have tonic in Boston. But in the southeast part of St. Louis, they call it sody with a Y. But one of the variables throughout the country that's always intrigued me is kitty corner or catty corner or catta corner. Is there any particular one that's more proper than the other?
It's not that they're more proper, but there's all sorts of variations on that. That's one of the, there's kitty corner, catty corner, catawampus, many different different versions of that. Let's see. I think that it's, to some extent, in the north and west, it's more likely to be kitty corner. In the south, it's more likely to be catter corner. And it can also be catawampus, calawampus, kankywampus, and many other things like that.
Wow.
And as to which is correct, who knows? You probably wouldn't use that in a formal speech in any case.
Oh, that's true, too. Well, thank you very much. I enjoy these variations. I was in the military for 30 years, and I traveled a lot, and I noticed different things. Another one that's in New England, you've surely heard of a frap for a milkshake. And you go up into Maine, and it's called a cabinet. But if you ask for a milkshake in Boston, all you get is syrup and milk with no ice cream. So it's quite interesting throughout the country. I enjoy this topic quite well, quite a bit. Thank you for my answer.
Thanks for the call. this afternoon. Other calls are welcome in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about American Regional English. This afternoon, our guest is linguist Alan Metcalf, who is the author of How We Talk American Regional English Today. Any further comments on our last caller from Boston, now living in the St. Louis area?
Well, you do have to be very careful in New England when you're asking for drinks like a milkshake. I think it's especially Rhode Island where it's a cabinet, and it's a frap in Boston, and he's right. If you ask for a milkshake in Boston, you'll be, and if you're not from Boston, you'll be somewhat disappointed.
Yeah.
I should mention also that there are a few regional terms that are distinctive to our part of the country. I don't know if you've ever heard of a horseshoe sandwich.
I have. I've enjoyed quite a few of them over the years. As a matter of fact, I went to school in Springfield.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. Springfield, of course, is the epicenter of the horseshoe sandwich, and its knowledge of it and availability of it does spread out from Springfield. Can you get them in Urbana?
No. Mm-mm. They have not arrived in Urbana.
Well, of course, you probably know why. I've noticed quite a few regional terms for words, and after you learn what the terms describe, you get a sense of why they haven't spread throughout the country. Maybe we should mention for your listeners that the horseshoe sandwich consists of a piece of bread or toast on which you put some meat, on which you put French fries, and on which you put a cheese sauce of some kind, and it's highly caloric and greasy, and it's a true test of if you're a native Springfielder or not.
Yeah. And in Springfield, there seems to be, now this is a sandwich that is available in a number of places in Springfield. And it depends on where you're having your sandwich, if the cheese is over the fries or the fries are on top of the cheese.
Yes, a very important little distinction there.
So there are folks that want to get their horseshoe at Norbandy's and other folks who want to get their horseshoe at Maldener's and so on and so forth. And we should mention what the smaller version of this behemoth of a sandwich is called.
Yes, if you're not quite up to a whole horseshoe, you can have a pony.
Yeah, a pony shoe. Let's go next to line one, a listener, another cell phone. Good afternoon.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about a word I heard in a high school just recently. Have you heard the word majorly?
I've heard the word.
A majorly big storm.
Yes, a good, that's probably, well, it's an example of how new words get formed all the time, because you can take any word and add a ly to it, not any word, but a whole lot of words, and they become, they're unnecessary new words, but they kind of get added. You can add ness to a lot of words, too. I'm just going to look here and see if majorly happens to have made it into the American Heritage Dictionary.
Well, if it hasn't, I'm on a one-man crusade against it.
Here it is. It's listed as slang and majorly.
Oh, that's terrible.
All right, well, good luck in your crusade.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Isn't it funny how strongly we feel about some words, how majorly we might get upset?
Yes, and actually that's a very important point for the whole question of how we speak, because we all have a strong sense of this is my way of saying things, and the other ways that I've heard, if they're different, are not my way. Some of us, if we happen to be English teachers or editors or persons who feel that we're an authority, often will then say, my way is the correct way, and other ways are wrong ways. Or it's also possible that if we feel linguistically inferior, we say, well, gosh, my way ain't the right way, but it's the way I say it anyhow. But I think it's a necessary part of language to have strong feelings about which words and which pronunciations mm-hmm. are your pronunciations. Otherwise, every time you heard something different from someone, you'd change around.
Yeah. And also, you know, when in Rome, we do like the Romans do. You know, if I was a friend of this guy who just called us about majorly, and I knew it upset him so, I wouldn't use it.
A very wise thing. And one of the major, not majorly, differences between North and South, of course, is the use of y'all versus you guys. And when I was a visiting professor at Texas A&M University about 15 years ago, and I began saying you guys to my students and realized that they were looking at me sort of funny, so I switched to y'all. Then when I came back to Jacksonville and started saying y'all to my students, I quickly switched back from that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with another listener now. On line two, a caller in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Am I on the right line?
Yes.
Okay. I had a question about a regional phrase used here. I moved to Central Illinois from the East a few years ago, and I noticed here people say, I sure don't. Like, you'll ask them for something. You go to a store or you ask for help, and they don't have it, and they say, I sure don't. And it's usually you hear people say that I sure do when they want to affirm that they have something. It often sounds odd when they're turning you down and they're so emphatic about it, but sound sweet. So you don't know whether they're being sarcastic or they mean it sincerely. And I just wondered if you had any ideas about where such a usage would begin or what, you know, what it tries to say when they say I sure don't.
That's a very interesting question. I don't know the distribution on that, but it does. And it's one to look into. It reminds me, though, one of the distinctive things that we have in our part of the country is that we use any more for things that are not negative. So we say, any more, it looks like it's going to rain.
Uh-huh.
In the North and in the South and in New England, they would consider that very strange because any more is used there only with negatives. It's not good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, any more, it's good, that's a more or less normal thing for this part of the country and the middle part of the country.
So maybe the negatives and positives are switched around.
Right. Well, anyhow, I sure don't know exactly where sure don't is, but I thank you for pointing that out, and I'll look it up.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. In a way, I think that, you know, I've heard that, and I've probably used that, you know, and it's a way of saying sincerely, gosh, I wish I could help you. But I sure can't, or I sure don't have whatever you're looking for. And it seems we do that also with positives in terms of, you know, people who will say, well, immediately what comes to mind is Northern Midwest. Yeah. You know, that Fargo kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I'm, you know, there's empathy going on between the two of us, you know, and I'm agreeing with you. And I guess does that happen in other parts of the country that, you know, that kind of, yes, I know exactly what you mean, that kind of reinforcement of what the other guy is feeling or thinking or saying?
I think you're right. There's many, many ways of saying it. I have unreliable authority that in Seattle they say, yeah, she is, or yeah, it is. And I suspect that, well, the caller was right, and everybody says, I sure do. It's just the question of I sure don't that's sort of rare. But there are different ways, many ways of emphasizing that you empathize, right?
Yeah. Let's talk with another caller on line three in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi. I had a question about something that I'm not sure if it's regional or generational, but I grew up in Minnesota, and we had dinner and supper, and lunch was something you had when you had guests over in the evening. But I come down here, and if I say dinner, that's the evening meal, and lunch is a noon meal. And I didn't know if this was something that would maybe be regional or if this was something that maybe the older people that I grew up with did.
Well, that's one that's both regional and situational. And the situation is, dinner is always a major meal. And so if you're used to having your major meal at midday, then that's dinner. And that's especially characteristic of rural situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if it's not a major meal, you have lunch. And if it's not a major meal in the evening, that would be supper. So, of course, it's more complicated than that, but generally, when you generally find your major meal occurring, that's called dinner, and then the other is either lunch or supper.
Well, that would make sense. My the family who used lunch, and that was, you know, the thing you had after supper in the evening before your guests went home, there was a farm family kind of situation, so that would make sense. as far as situational. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. I know some folks who live in Escanaba, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula, and they eat breakfast, dinner, supper, and lunch. And lunch is a small meal you eat after dinner before or after supper before you go to bed. So you might have like a bowl of cereal or something before retiring. And this was whether there was company or not.
I guess you need a lot of fuel up there in the UP.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk with another listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a similar question to the last one about going to a show. My grandparents and my parents, who are from the rural northern plains, would say whenever we want to go to a movie, they say, do you want to go to a show? But I grew up in central Texas, and my peers would say, do you want to go to the movies? And I was wondering, is that a regional or is that a generational difference in the use of those terms? Thanks. I'll hang up.
Sure. I think it's more generational, but I don't have a specific answer on that one.
Let's talk with another listener in Philo on line two. Good afternoon.
What is the derivation of the word kinesiology?
Well, let's see. Probably it's Greek, of all things, and I happen to have a dictionary here, so let me just flip to kinesiology. I don't happen to have every word etymology on, but let's see. Kinesiology, it comes from Greek kinesis, as in kinetics, meaning movement, and ology, of course, is like other ologies in Greek, so that goes back to the Greeks.
Very good. I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. Others are welcome to join us with questions and comments. In Champaign-Urbana, our number, 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're calling, toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. Next, we go to a listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. To what extent does the place in which you were raised have to do with whether you can actually hear the differences in speech? I was raised in the Midwest, and my husband grew up in Manhattan in New York City, and he is continually amazed by the fact that I can't really distinguish the difference between the name Mary and Mary as in Merry Christmas and to marry someone. And so this is a constant source of amazement for him. And also my children, who were born and raised in the Midwest, also can't really hear the differences.
Well, that's a very good distinction between the East Coast on the one hand and the Midwest and West on the other. And if your children or you made those distinctions, you would sound to other Midwesterners as if you were from the East. Mm-hmm. It's not as if you can't make that distinction, but it just happens that in the East, the one about happiness is the same as we say Mary. The one about joining in a relationship with somebody else is Mary, mm-hmm. with the vowel of hat. And then some Easterners also, the woman's name is Mary with mm-hmm. an A kind of sound, as in the word May.
Yeah, we can hear it, but only if it's really very distinctly said the way you just did, not the way people usually speak.
Well, actually, if you really listen for it, even we Midwesterners can hear it because we do make distinctions among those three vowels. It's just that in those words, we happen to not make a distinction.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. 333-WILL. That's 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. That's 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine, American Regional English. Our topic this afternoon, our guest is linguist Alan Metcalf. He's the author of many books, including How We Talk, American Regional English Today. Let's talk with another listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering the origin of the different pronunciation of aunt and aunt.
Oh, yes. Well,
I've actually noticed when I was in college, it's just the first time that I had sort of met people from around the different areas, that people from the Northwest said aunt. I'm from Michigan, and I've always said aunt.
Yes, it's a complicated intertwining of pronunciations. I think the more general American pronunciation is aunt, but you get to the Northwest, I think also Minnesotans tend to say aunt. I think a fair number in New England do, and also in African-American speech, it's usually aunt. But there are a lot of people, almost everyone notices the variation, and so there's a lot of individual variations in that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call. You know, we speak English, but so do the people of Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there is such great difference between American English and British English. Why is that so?
Well, it's because all living languages tend to change a bit. And whether you're a prescriptionist or a liberalist or whatever, there is no known language that doesn't have some drift and some change, just because instead of, language isn't something that we learn like that's born into us, but rather we learn it from what we hear around us, and each of us sort of creates the language anew. So Americans have had 2 centuries to go their way, and the British have had 2 centuries to go their way. There's been a lot of communication back and forth, but we've drifted one way, they've mm-hmm. drifted another. The Eastern New England has kept a kind of close connection with British English, and their version of American English sounds more British than anything else in America.
What about the Canadians and Americans?
Eh? Well, the Canadians have a few distinctive things of their own, and one of them is that eh, and another is the out, the vowel and out in the boat, that are neither British nor American.
Yeah.
But Canadians tend to be somewhat British and somewhat American, even in their spellings. Sometimes they'll spell a word like, you know, the British is C-O-L-O-U-R, and some Canadians spell it that way, and some spell it C-O-L-O-R.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener on line 2 on a car phone in Champaign. Hi.
Hello. I was wondering, I think it's first on the BBC that I heard the term gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
Something had gone missing. Do you know that one? Have you heard that before?
I've heard it. I don't have any special insight into where it is said. Perhaps it's British if it came from the BBC.
Well, now I hear it all the time, even on our radio station. And I don't know when this started, but...
Well, that's a good question. It's one I'll look into, but I don't at the moment have any special insight.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the call. Has American English become more homogenous over time?
Actually, you could say yes and no. On the one hand, the very local little dialects that you might hear, the distinctive speech in one little town or another, have tended to disappear because people are a little too mobile for that. But the regional dialects, or even the city dialects, remain very strong because even despite things like television and radio, you may hear a different way of speaking on television, but television doesn't hear you. So if you start speaking like the television, your friends will laugh at you. But if you speak your way, the television won't laugh at you. So even with all the broadcast media, we still tend to keep to our local patterns.
Mm. On to another caller in Champaign on line 1. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering about a phrase that I heard used when I was working in the oil patch, well, not in the oil patch per se, but with a bunch of people from the oil patch. We were in Oklahoma, and the fellow who used the phrase was actually from Louisiana, but had spent a lot of time in Texas. And he used to say things like, when we needed to do something or we should do something, he'd say, we might could take a look at that, or we might should take a look at that. He would stick might in there in front of those phrases, whereas we would just say, we should take a look at that, or we might want to do that or something.
Yes, that's a wonderful, distinctive southern thing that you can hear throughout the South from the Atlantic coast up to Texas. The might could is the most common of the compounds. but also might can, and sometimes there's even triple connections like that. In the rest of the English-speaking world, you can use only one of those modals that we call them, may, might, can, could, shall, should, will. But in the South, you can toss a few of them together, might, can, could.
Interesting. Is the caller still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
It's interesting that you called the place that you worked the oil patch. I guess I would call it an oil field. But is that oil patch the common usage in Oklahoma?
They talked about it, the patch being, as I understood it, I'm from the East, I'm from Canada, I called earlier, but I understood oil patch to mean the sort of rich oil states, Texas, Oklahoma.
Oh,
perhaps,
okay.
Part of New Mexico, I'm not a geologist.
The whole territory.
Texas obviously would be the center of it, but these guys were, a lot of the guys I worked with were from Midland and that area where they have a lot of the refining capacity for the company that I was with, but they were from Houston, which is, you know, big petrochemical port. So, I mean, and the guys were using U-All and y'all and we might could and where are we at, which annoyed me, you know, and
probably they also said fix
them
too.
We're not at anywhere. We have to go somewhere for it. So, but it took me a while to sort of, you know, get up to speed on the usages. And people from the South have just some interesting expressions that you have to figure out the context. I mean, I have a friend or a colleague who I'm convinced used to just make some up to confuse me. And upset me. He would say things like, sort of exclaiming about something, he would say, well, strap my face to the side of a hog and let her run. And I would sit there just completely flabbergasted. I had no idea what that meant. Is it good or is it bad? Is it, you know, is it something that's immediate or... You know, you can understand when someone says, well, he's busier than a one-armed paper hanger, or hotter than a pig in a poke, even though I don't know what that means. But you know, you could sort of puzzle it out.
Yeah, but, a poke, of course, is a bag or sack.
Right.
Yeah.
I know that now from the show today.
And a pig in a poke means actually that sort of being bamboozled or being taken advantage of. And the pig turned out to be the pig in a poke, not a pig, but often a cat or some other animal.
If you're offering a pig for sale, but it's in a poke, nobody can see what it is.
Yep, so check, ask to look in the poke.
Right.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. That oil patch, that's really interesting because it describes a part of the country that is southern yet also has another big identifying characteristic that it's rich in oil.
Yes.
Takes in many states.
Mm-hmm. And a bit western also.
Yeah.
I suspect also they were saying fixin' to in Texas and in the South.
Yeah. This idea of we might could look at something,
mm-hmm.
It seems often in language we do something, we use words that, we put words together that are redundant to either for emphasis or perhaps to soften the blow, or, I mean, might be a way of softening things up a little bit rather than saying, we've got to look at that.
Yes, well, but it also allows you to be more precise. That is, it's like being, instead of playing one note, you can play two. So if you might could, then you might, then you could do it, or you might could. As you say, it's a little less likely, because Southerners can certainly say you could do it, or you might do it,
mm-hmm.
but there are occasions where they say, well, you might could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting to speculate. Suppose that the makers of grammar books in the U.S. and in the English-speaking world spoke that kind of English. Then, of course, might could would be a standard way of saying things, and they'd criticize others for not using both words to be more precise, because, you know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
critics say, well, you have to distinguish between less and fewer because that's more precise. And the might-could speakers could say, well, it's just terrible that others can't use this nice distinction.
Let's talk with another listener on line 4 in Danville. Hi.
Hi. Just as a preface, I might say that I've lived in South Texas for quite a while and was quite familiar with their might-could, but I always interpreted it as might-be-able to, which is I would have said in those circumstances. The question I have is about a phrase that indicates you've taken the long way around. I can remember my mother saying when I had taken overlong on an errand, "Oh, you must have gone around Robin Hood's barn." Is that a common phrase, or and what is its derivation, and are there other phrases that give the same meaning?
There are a lot of phrases like that. I don't have the reference offhand as to which is where, but yes, there's a lot of roundabout expressions. I'm glad that she had a good one there.
Well, I never got a chance to ask her, but I thought afterward Robin Hood's barn would be the whole of Sherwood Forest, and so
right.
if that's the way of it, well, that's the way I've tended to think of it.
Well, I'll tell you where you could look this up if you have some time. There's the Dictionary of
American Regional Expressions?
Of American Regional English. Dictionary of American Regional English.
You mean the big project that Frederick Cassidy?
That's right.
Oh, well, yes, I have talked to Frederick Cassidy about this.
Oh, well, have you seen that volume of the dictionary?
The only one I presently own is the very first one.
Well, that's got a round in it. So.
Huh? Oh.
So look under the A for a round and see if that's in there. And I suspect it might be. I don't have it at hand at the moment.
Well, that's true. It was one very special one for that same meaning that I heard in Western Massachusetts that I called him about. I think it was on Celeste's show, and he asked me to write him a letter with the circumstances and so on, which I did, and have his reply, which I assume that one is going to be in a further dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah, take a look in your copy of the dictionary then.
Let's go next to a caller on line 2 in Broadlands. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling about an expression that my grandfather used to use. He was born on the Isle of Man, I think in the 1870s. He used to talk about it raining pitchforks and hoe handles. And I've never heard anybody else ever use that expression. And I'm wondering if you know anything about it.
I have not heard that before. And the Dictionary of American Regional English, which I just referred to, has not yet published its volume with R in it. It goes through the letter O, and the volume with the letter R is due out in the year 2002. So, if you call in 2 years from now, or look for that volume when it comes out at your nearby bookseller, you might be able to get the answer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with someone here on line 3 in Champaign. Hi.
Yes, hello. I wanted to ask about the regional differences between porch and stoop, and whether such a difference would ever coordinate, say, with other differences like pail and bucket.
Very good question. I don't know the distribution of porch and stoop, but it might very well. Stoop, I think it's basically a Dutch term, and so that would be something you'd probably find in the Hudson Valley area, certainly, and perhaps spread much further than that. The pail is a northern term, bucket a southern term, basically, although they're both widely known both north and south.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. To my way of thinking, a stoop is it could be just a small couple of steps that you could also call a porch, but a porch would be something that I would think would be a little larger than a stoop.
I think around here, certainly, we mostly have porches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in cities, people come out and sit on the stoop.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk with another listener on line 1 in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Well, this is what bothers me is on the commentators on television and even our preachers. They say, "if I was," instead of "if I were," and "like me," instead of saying "like I am." They get "good" and "well" mixed up. And the children are listening to these improper commentations. I wonder what we can do to help it.
Well, I think I can simply say that those differences in usage are going to persist, and people complained about them 50 or 100 years ago, and they're likely to do it in the future. But you could defend "like me," because "like" is a preposition and takes an object form. So She looks just like me. Seems perfectly reasonable to me. You can add like I am or like I look.
Well, you just take am is taken for granted, but it is like I.
Well, I think like often is a preposition.
No, it takes the.
Well, however, you can.
The proposition though takes the subjunctive form.
Well, a preposition takes the object form. Now a statement, the if I was or were is a different matter, and some people have said the if I was form is so widespread that it will drive out the other, but in fact, in the past 100 years or so, it hasn't done that. So I think we'll still find a lot of divided usage and a lot of confusion, and that's just the way. One of the sayings about grammar is that all grammars leak, which really means that all languages have little rough edges, and it's difficult to get precise about all of them.
Mm-hmm. You're right. But as an old English teacher, it irritates me.
Oh, sure. Well, give it a try.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we talk with a listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. I think pitchforks and hoe handles is English, and I suspect it comes from either Yorkshire or the north, perhaps the border country. So it might not appear in the regional dictionary of American English or American Dictionary of Regional English.
That could well be, and since he said it came from the Isle of Man, that may be totally un-American.
Yeah. By the way, I thought the editor of that dictionary was Professor Haugen of Minnesota. Or did they both work on it? Did both Cassidy and Haugen work on it?
Haugen was an expert on other languages in American English. But no, Fred Cassidy, who died last June, has always been the editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. And the dictionary is still going on. Joan Hall is his successor, and they're mm-hmm. moving right along on finishing that up.
I heard Haugen speak here, probably 15 years ago, and it seems to me he was speaking on regional variety, and maybe that's why I confused it.
Oh, yeah, well, he certainly knew a lot about it. No
marvelous
question.
Speaker. Is he still alive?
I believe he's also dead now.
Too bad. Well, he'd be a very old man, I guess. He'd
yeah.
Probably close to 80 then. Well, distinction between English, British English and American English, I say that the difference between, say, London's variety and that of, say, Yorkshire is greater than the difference between Chicago and London.
There is certainly the British, the English have had 1,000 years head start on us in developing distinctive dialects. And in fact, one of the reasons why we have different dialects in American English is that speakers of different dialects of British English came in varying numbers and mixtures to our Atlantic settlements. So, yes, there's plenty of very strong variety in British English.
Mm. I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. We've just got a minute left here, and I thought before we have to say goodbye. I would ask you about sofa, couch, Davenport, and Chesterfield.
Oh, yes. Well, I can tell you the last is the most distinctive. Chesterfield is a term that used to be used in San Francisco and its trading vicinity and is now rather rare there, but it's also a Canadian term. As for sofa and couch and Davenport, those don't show such clear regional distribution. One of the things I was looking for was to see if Davenport was distinctive to Davenport, Iowa. And as far as I can tell, they don't say Davenports in Davenport any much more than they do elsewhere.
Interesting. I wonder about here in Illinois, sofa or couch, what do you suppose is the most used, widely used?
Well, they're both used, and I almost suspect some people think of sofa as something bigger than a couch. Although, that's a good question, but again, I think there isn't a clear-cut distinction, and I think a lot of people use both words.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Well, the time has flown by, I hope that we'll do this again at some point in the future with all the interest we got from listeners this afternoon. It's a topic everybody likes to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very pleased to have been invited.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Professor Metcalf.
You're welcome.
Alan Metcalf is a professor of English at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. He's the executive secretary of the American Dialect Society. He's the author of many books, including How We Talk, American Regional English Today. How We Talk is published by Houghton Mifflin.